Accession number 17984, Real 4.
Jim Oates, Real 4.
We knew he was a sniper because he had binoculars and was looking in our direction. And he had a rifle in his hand, beside him. So the instructions were for me to shoot him. And I looked at the distance and I said, it's going to be by luck if one... I said, it's at least 800 yards away. And I guessed that because we were looking down into a bowl and up. Distance is deceiving. I knew he was more than 600 because in good daylight, as snipers, we knew at 600 yards, you knew it was 600 yards when you couldn't tell whether that man is a white man or a black man. Colours go in distance. So I gauged him to be at least 800 yards. And there was a strong wind blowing across. And as we snipers know, we were only told to shoot at a maximum of 400 to 600 yards for accuracy, even with your sights, because of allowing for trajectory. The further distance, the more trajectory. So anyway, I was told to shoot. So I had the chap beside me with a 22.5 mag. We mustn't look through that too long, as we eyes are mucked up looking through the other sights on the rifle. I took aim on him. I don't know how many degrees to the left. I went well to the left of him to allow for the wind. Then I went well above where his head would be to allow for trajectory. It was all calculated guesswork. And I did the impossible thing. I squeezed the trigger. And it seemed ages before the man with the telescope shouted, "God almighty, Jim. Here, look." So I took the telescope from him and looked towards where the chap had been standing. And about 2 feet above his head was where it hit the stucco plastered gable end of his cottage. Where he'd gone. So, allowing for all that guesswork, I was 2 foot above his head, allowing for the wind, deflection and trajectory. And while I'm looking, an old lady opens the door. See what the noise was, I suppose. She turns around and looks at the hole above her door. She scurries in, shutting the door. And I thought, oh, well, be conscious, it's clear. I know I haven't killed anybody yet. But the fighting, I'll say again, was a lot. And proof of that, I knew I was lucky. I knew I wasn't going to die in this war because of certain things that happened. Whilst we were in this place, I was asked to bring two soldiers to what we used as company office. I knew where they were, what room they were in. I walked down the room to tell them they're wanted. I opened the door, looked inside, they weren't there. So I shut the door to go back, and as I shut the door to go back, there was an awful explosion inside. I opened the door and I couldn't see anything. All powder, dust, and good Lord. And when it cleared, what had happened, the partisan, the ELAS, had fired a flipping shell, mortar shell or something, and it had come through the window, must have struck the wall and exploded. And I thought, so that happened as I closed the door. If those two soldiers had been in that room, I'd have been there with them, talking to them, explaining they're wanted. That was a bit of luck. Yes, we did so much. And then after that subsided, and we had...
But did you go out on attacks on the...
Yes, we used to go out street clearing, house clearing. Clearing the ELAS out, that meant, you know, just like as if they were Germans and we occupied the houses in your village, you would go out and attack them and shoot them out.
This was in the streets of Athens?
In the streets of Athens.
Near Mount Leviticus?
You got it, yeah. 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 Mind you, we weren't the only troops there. Because it was another small war. They had sent in, and I don't know the definition, the Air Force also had a soldier brigade. I don't know what they call them now. I used to know. I forget.
RAF Regiment.
RAF, you got it, yeah. So they were there. And they did some useful work as well, in conjunction with us, but separately. So we weren't the only troops. They did all right.
Were the HLI taking many casualties in the street fighting?
Not too many, funny enough. No, not too many. If I refer to my notes, I might see what casualties did have. There was one casualty. We lost our... Was he a captain or a lieutenant? In one... In doing the street clearing, we had down this street, call it a street, our mortar squads, our 2-inch and 4-inch mortar, and their job was to shoot the mortars over the houses, behind the houses. We also had guns with mortar bomb or hand grenade bomb things that you fitted over the muzzle, and you had a ballistic type of bullet that fired it out. The officer got excited and sat down with the lads, and I think through his interfering, unfortunately, when he shot his one up, he wanted to do the shooting, the damn thing hit some wires, because a lot of their electricity was overhead wiring, and the damn flipping mortar shell fell back on them, and that was kaput to him.
Did you account for many of the enemy?
Yes, obviously, yes. Yeah, because we were far, far superior to them, even though they were partisan fighters, you know. They didn't stand a chance with us and the RAF chaps.
What was the general attitude of the Athenian population towards the different sides? Who were they sympathetic to, as far as you could tell?
I don't know. We always got on so well with the Greek people. I couldn't say. I'm not left with any opinion of whether they're for or against the lads, which comes back to my opening remarks. In dealing with ordinary people, or whatever country we went in, the ordinary people don't want this. It seems as if it's pushed onto them by warlords and power politicians. The ordinary people don't want it. But by sometimes with careful propaganda, like Hitler with his Hitler Youth, lifting Germany out of the aftermath of the 20s, they thought the world gave them work, didn't he? And actually you've only got to look at our football crowds, how they get stirred up. It's easy to stir people up, isn't it? You see them all whooping and shouting things you and I wouldn't do normally.
But was it frightening doing this street fighting work?
No, I don't ever remember being frightened. Apprehensive, careful, but actual fear, I don't remember that myself.
Did you capture any of the lads?
That I can't remember. We must have done, but I can't remember. Whether we just merely drove them out. I've got a feeling that was the main thing. We didn't want ELAS prisoners, just driving them out. And they were driven out, because from there, we're talking about Athens, which is really more south. From Patras, we went by boat through the Corinth Canal to Athens. When we landed, we were sent back, and then we went round by boat the Corinth Canal. But because the ELAS and their partisans spread out then, when you look at the map of Greece, Athens would be on the eastern side. Patras is just the Peloponnese ends. They're not too far from each other. But the rest of Greece, which is open, sparse, and contains everything, hills, everything, that's where they deployed in those villages. And that's when we were sent out then to, I can only say again, protect the villages and harass the partisans. And you asked me what the people thought of ELAS. I'll call them partisans, it's not fair on the original partisans. A classic example, when we were sent out now in the field and we were split up our own company, we're going through one village, stuck out in the wilds, I'll say now, for the want of knowing exactly where. And this village, a small village, and it had a school building, nothing like our school, just. And to our surprise, when we reached, locked up in that school building was the local inhabitants of that village. And when we released them and asked them what happened, because we still knew there were Germans around, that hadn't been cleared right out. No. It was the ELAS partisan forces had demanded from them their blankets. They were commandeering from these villages, and because the villagers didn't want to cooperate, they locked them up in the school, ransacked their village and pushed on. Now that's fact. Now whether that answers your earlier question, what did the people think of the political partisans?
So what was the morale of the HLI like on these operations?
Oh, good. Yeah. Only once, and that's later on, I'll tell you about that in Italy, did I see two of our chaps go the old World War One expression, bomb happy, and had to be sent away. Only once that. And two of our chaps. I'll come to that later. But it was in Greece, after we left Athens, and now picking up any German prisoners or protecting the villages from the ELAS people to show them force, we picked up a German prisoner. See, they would gladly come to us and the partisans. We had to hold him because we couldn't do anything about it. It was the trouble with infantry locks like us. You've got to hold on to your prisoners, you've got somewhere to transfer them. That's why we often got the trip of going to Italy, which was good for a holiday. But this chap, Ludwig, we had to hold him for quite a while. He became one of us. And if you know what happened to Andy Anderson, we're so pleased that we looked after our prisoners. So much so, and this is a joke, it could offend some people. It might even offend Germans. I don't know, though we've got very good German friends. He used to play games with us, with Sergeant Bryden, who later got killed in Italy. We would be sitting about in loose order, off parade as it were, and he'd come marching out the cookhouse, or where we carried our cooks. And he'd look at us, almost like an SS Nazi German Uber lieutenant, you know. We knew what was coming, there'd come be some guy. And he would order us, act on. We'd all have to jump up, just for a go, stand to attention. Then he'd introduce Slaggy Bryden, Sergeant Bryden, in German. I haven't got much German to my lips, although I've got Herr Kommandant Karl Hoffmann. And that'd be Slaggy coming out. And Slaggy's come out goose-stepping. And on command of Ludwig, we all had to put our arm up and shout out, "Hail Hitler!" It was all a joke. When we had to hand him over, when we had to go back to Italy, he was crying his eyes out. And every German prisoner we took, in areas like where the partisans were and that, we always dressed them in British clothes, so our clothes, so that they couldn't by accident be picked up by the partisans as Germans and shot immediately. We always dressed them. Yeah, when we had to go back to Italy, crying his eyes out, we had to leave him, we couldn't take him on the boat. We loaded him up with money and eventually, when we left Greece, mind you, after all our field work, rounding up, we ended back in Athens for a while. And there's still some fighting going on with Elas. And it was from there we were going to be detailed to go to North Italy, up in the hills. But because we've been on duty so long, and I mean so long, on, you weren't allowed to take your boots off. You were 2 hours on duty, 4 hours off, round the clock. And you weren't allowed to, well, you were allowed to take your boots off and nothing else, that's right. No chance to wash, shave or do anything. When you get a few weeks like that, you're in a shocking condition. And before we was due to go to Italy, we all broke out with scabies, you know. But nonetheless, they still sent us to Italy for a rest before we went on to North Italy. They sent us to Rome for about 2 or 3 weeks rest. Little did the Romans that know that, yeah, we were all lumbered with scabies and that war. It was on our way up to North Italy. Betty, when we was up to North Italy, we was going up where, somewhere where the Po runs through, River Po, where it's hilly, somewhere in the middle somewhere, I forget the exact district. I had another lucky escape. As we was entering the area where we were going, it was steep hills, we'd call them mountains in England, steep hills, look over the left, and was in full convoy with our trucks. My mate Wally, myself, as we slowed up, the convoy's coming to a halt, we decided with passing a small Italian village, we would jump out, buy what we could, and jump back in the truck. But it didn't work out quite like that, because by the time we'd bought what we wanted, hurrying up, our trucks had moved on. So we grabbed the first troop carrier truck that we could reach running after it, climbed up the towel board and realised we were in what we called our G1098 truck that carried all our explosives, ammunition, that carried the lot. And hanging on the back was axes and all our... Okay, we stood at the back of the towel board holding on, going up this road. Then there came at one point when everything went wrong. One minute we're going in the truck, and the next minute we got over the side. Going ahead of myself, what happened to the driver? I think they were Indian drivers taking us. He'd gone too fast to turn right, panicked, and unfortunately, by a bit of luck, and in about 60 to 80 foot drop when one looked back, fortunate to us, as it went over, we went that way, not head over heels. The truck was going sideways. Inside the truck, we just didn't know, I mean, it was. But when we hit the bottom, again we were lucky, as we hit the bottom, well, it was a bit flatter, so a truck shot like a pip forward, and we shot out the back like pips. And the truck was on four wheels still when it landed. I looked at Wally and his forehead, one of these axes, good job it wasn't the sharp end, one of the axes must have been a blunt head, had hit him on the forehead, and I saw a bump growing like an egg. I went to get up to find the rifle and I'd busted my ankle. And our battalion has stopped, naturally, and they're shouting out to us to, in case the truck caught fire with all that explosives and ammunition and everything. We had trouble getting up, found our rifles, but fortunately the truck didn't go up, so our troops came down. The two drivers, they were lucky as well. Only one had a broken shoulder. So we were damn lucky. But that's why I knew fate was always on my side.
But you were just travelling up to an operation area?
Yeah. Was going up to where the hills were. We're war so funny, and whether people believe you, I don't make two hoops. I'm always content with my memories and the truth. Somewhere up, as I say, the middle of Italy, I think, somewhere before you reach the River Po, you know, and it was hilly. Again, what I call it, mountainous hilly. And to the left, lower down, was our Gurkha soldiers. And we were more or less going up to take over this area, up on this big, long slope. We set up our base camp, then moved forward up the hill for where our action would take place. And we put barbed wire around our area quickly. And where our action was going to take place, away from our base HQ, we dug two-man slit trenches. So when you was sent, that's where you lived. That's where you stayed, in that two-man slit trench, as it were, you know. It was awful weather, snow and rain, and that. Now, the funny thing is this. When one crawled up to the brow of the hill, believe it or not, when you look down the slope, and there's one or two bushes, like gorse bushes here and there, you would at times see washing, where the germs are washing their spores and they're hanging it on the bushes. No doubt they might have crept up and looked down and see what the English soldiers were doing, I don't know. But that's the God's truth. In the daytime, nothing. The only thing that happened in the daytime, again, it seems hard to believe, and again, I've lost the evidence, like the Drachma notes and something else I lost about Austria. From somewhere, from the flank, the Germans were shooting shells over us. Not explosive shells. They only exploded in the air for some reason. And all the shells contained, as the God's truth, were propaganda leaflets. A classic one would be a very rich Jew man sitting on a chair, like an armchair, with a cigar in his hand, and made to look real Jewish. And kneeling in front of him would have been a well-dressed British soldier in British uniform, kneeling in front of him. And the words in English meant, this is what you're risking your life for, or worse to that effect. Propaganda. The other propaganda leaflet that came over, and it's the God's truth, advice and instructions to the soldiers and how to deceive your medical officers with phony ailments in order to get away from the fighting. That's the truth. And I wished I had saved those bad. You'd have been so interested. Because it hadn't.
Did these leaflets have any effect on the...
No, to us they were one big joke. See, just, I mean, to us it was just one big joke. Because we were so used to Nazi propaganda on the Germans themselves, you know. No effect on us. The only time there was any action in this area of North Italy, we had three jobs to do up in the area. Well, more than three, but first we would send out a listening post at night. Three or four chaps. And they had microphones attached to their throat, one either side. Wired up, don't ask me how. So that whatever you saw, you spoke in a very quiet voice like that, and these microphones picked up what you were saying in your throat, and it went back to base. That was one type of patrol we did. The next type of patrol we would do, now I can't think how we classified that, it'll come to me. Reconnaissance, I think we called that. This time there'll be about eight or nine chaps go out. And their job, always at night, their job was to cause the Germans, which as I said before, we're not fired, to fire back in order to assess what their weapon strength was. Because with hindsight, looking back, the Germans no doubt were aware of that and wouldn't fire enough. And then the third patrol, and that's when we did lose chaps. Not too many, because we weren't a big battalion, but enough, I mean. Was a fighting patrol. And again, the obvious reason for a fighting patrol, wherever you contacted a group of Germans, you would attack. Tie them, drive them back, or surrender, because they would fire back. But in most times, most cases, I suppose because the war was on the blink, not because we were wonderful soldiers, I don't know, but in 9 cases out of 10, the Germans would retreat, because we're talking about 1944 now, see.
45, presumably.
Yeah, 45. States here somewhere, yeah.
Must be the early part of 1945. But carry on, never mind.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you know of any places nearby where you were? The names of any places? Can you remember?